what transpired at Toronto City Council last night, and when is enough enough? And listen, Mark Saunders was on with us, former Toronto Police Chief, Stephanie Smythe and Brad Bradford, and both Stephanie and Mark made the point, listen, when you amplify a protest, you are giving the protesters some of what you want. And I think we've all wrestled with that. Pay attention to it or don't. But there are certain guidelines. I wouldn't feel good not saying enough things about this as we move forward. And it hasn't pleased everybody. And sometimes I'm like, this isn't the day to do this. There's more pressing issues. And yet last night, I watch the mayor of the city of Toronto, it's the biggest city in the country, basically get, she didn't, never got touched, but there's an, how would I put it? There's an emotional understanding of a manhandling there. There's an understanding that she's being pushed around without being pushed, bullied without being touched when they grab the microphone and start accusing her of supporting genocide. And I'm not going to go back to my Western days completely and go, I know what genocides are because we would study them in school as a poli-sci major. There were two distinct genocides happening and I don't love everything that I've seen from Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu. I don't. How could anybody? But I do know they have a right to defend themselves. And I do know that I'm convinced this is not a genocide. It's the first genocide, by the way, in modern history where food packages have been dropped for the citizens of Gaza. I would argue that the Israelis are valuing the life and future of the Gazans more than Hamas is. Hamas wants casualties. Why would they inflate numbers? Why would they put their people in vulnerable positions otherwise? And that doesn't mean Israel's done everything right. But when you're in university and you're watching a true Bosnian genocide in Bosnia and Herzegovina, where the concept is ethnically cleanse as many of the Bosniak population as possible during the war, when you're watching simultaneously what's happening in Rwanda, and the goal is kill as many Tutsis as possible. You might remember that ethnic class in Rwanda. And the watch Hotel Rwanda, watch the movie with Don Cheadle. 60 to 70% of those people were killed. That's not what's happening in Gaza right now, not by a long shot. And you don't have to be, you don't have to go to university to recognize that. So there's some disingenuousness, and then there's just the pure safety aspect as well. Michael Geist, as we mentioned, law professor at the University of Ottawa, joins us now on Toronto Today. Thanks for making the time for us, first of all.
Oh, pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I don't know if you thought from October 8th onward, Michael, that we'd have this kind of conversation and the tone would be here March 27th. If I'd asked you to predict how these seven months would go, would you have said, yeah, the tension's going to be worse than ever 7 months in?
No, I don't think I would have predicted this. I don't think many would. That's not to say that I didn't think that the war in Gaza would have gone on this long. I thought that was telegraphed as a distinct possibility. But the anti-Semitism that we've seen in Canadian society, which seems to have only escalated and escalated and escalated, frankly, I didn't expect the escalation to begin with, and I certainly wouldn't have expected what has almost become a normalization of it many months later.
I've made the case protesters have certainly gotten emboldened, but I feel like, Michael, they've gotten more emboldened. For the example, in Toronto City Council chambers last night, they've actually been more aggressive to the people that have given them some voice and capitulated at times to their side. I think the people that say, absolutely not, we totally disagree, they don't seem to be the people getting hassled as much. Do I have that right?
That's an interesting observation. I think you can certainly make the case that's where some of the targets are. But I think that fundamentally one of the real problems here, especially when I circle back to the concerns around within the community and anti-Semitism, is that some of the targets have nothing to do with these issues, aren't decision makers, aren't politicians, aren't involved in the war at all. They are simply being targeted for being Jewish. And that to me is the part that was unthinkable before October 7th and which really does require a response.
You wrote about it yesterday on Twitter and on your website as well. And you wrote, growing up Jewish in Canada often meant a police presence at events, but it was largely background noise. Can you just elaborate on that and what was sort of in the airspace when you were a kid or a teenager and you spotted things like this and thought, like, there's an alertness that maybe you didn't think you had to have back then that you certainly do now?
Yeah, no, listen, I was not a regular at synagogue where I went during the high holidays, for example. And there was always a police presence at the synagogue we went to. in Toronto. And so you kind of just accepted it. It's just part of the, almost part of the scenery in certain respects. You knew that they were there because there was the potential for some sort of security related issue. So having a police presence there mattered, and we appreciated the police would be there. But you didn't really think about it, I don't think, significantly, and it kind of just became part of the norm. But the idea that you would need that, and that would be part of the norm, is not normal. The reality is that many communities can go to their houses of worship, their churches, or wherever they happen to go, without a police presence. Yet this community, our community, required it. And now, of course, requires it even to a far greater extent in schools and community centers, given what we've seen over the last number of months.
I mentioned being at Western's campus Saturday, and with my own, you know, you really get a sense of how the years have flown by when you're there with your own 18-year-old, and you remember being 19 and 20 years old yourself. You're frequently on a university campus. How has that evolution taken place over the last 6-7 months? More of a attention, or is there sort of a, I hate the idea that the new normal is for Jewish students on a campus to be more alert and more fearful, but I'm worried that that's the case.
Well, I certainly think it's the case. I don't think it's the same on every campus. You know, I think that there are some campuses that have been more accepting than others, and certainly we've seen over the last number of months many reports about some of the institutions where there have been real issues, and there's been quite a lot of reporting on it. But I will say that regardless of the situation, I think the reality, whether you're a student or a faculty member, is that openly being Jewish on campus is difficult right now, in a way that it may not be for many other groups. And to me, one of the real challenges is that, you know, many of our institutions have long emphasized inclusivity and the ability for people to be who they are and to proudly display that. And if you're Jewish on campus, it's very difficult to do that without concerns about what it might mean for your physical safety.
Michael, I got to leave it there, but thank you so much and for your advocacy as well. I know this is something a year ago, if I said, hey, you're going to be out there and talking about this a lot and advocating, but you're doing a wonderful job doing so, and I appreciate you doing it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for saying that. It's not something I ever would envision, but I think we all need to speak out.
Yeah, I agree. Michael Geist, law professor at the University of Ottawa, joining us.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.